I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
And welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Still to come on the program today, State Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed. He'll be with us in the next hour, as well as from Alabama Daily News, Mary Sell. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now, a favorite of mine, always to get on, and I'm very appreciative of his time, represents the 5th Congressional District in North Alabama, Congressman Mo Brooks. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Doing well. Got a couple of grandchildren here. Give them a little bit of root beer floats and popcorn and what have you.
Is that kind of the way you're making it with this COVID stuff? Getting to spend more time with the grandchildren and hang out, maybe do some fishing as well?
Well, I haven't had time for the fishing, but I did split a truckload of wood yesterday, and I loaded it at my house this morning. So I've been doing a bunch of different things. Getting ready to head to Washington, though, with Nancy Pelosi having summoned us for a Saturday vote.
Congressman, speaking of spare time, have you had any time to catch the last night's Democratic National Convention?
I don't watch horror stories.
Well, about as you would imagine, it's this. You either think that Joe Biden is a moderate that Republicans can vote for, or that he is the second coming of our. Of our socialist dreams to make level that playing field for everybody. They try to have it both ways, but are you of the school of thought that thinks if Joe Biden is elected president that we're really that we're really going to head down that road?
I probably would consider your comments a little bit on the mild side. I think we are definitely going to head down to an abysmal ending. And this is a very, very pivotal election in the history of the United States of America. Probably the most pivotal one since 1860 with Douglas and Lincoln.
That's quite the statement. But the consequences being that we're really going to change into something different if Donald Trump loses.
The Democrats are socialists. Socialism ultimately collapses and fails. And that's where our country will head. In addition to that, the Democrats are doing their utmost to divide us based on racial division, racist arguments that they advance on a regular basis, and that's not good for our country.
Congressman, let's talk about, you're heading to D.C. You mentioned that just a second ago about Nancy Pelosi sending you up there for a Saturday vote, obviously on the Postal Service stuff. Maybe I don't really see the urgency or the emergency. It just feels very, for the sake of politics to me.
It is politics. It's contrived. The Postal Service historically has had a deficit. This year is no different than any other. And if you listen to what the Democrats are really saying, think about their argument. They are claiming that one additional piece of mail coming into your mailbox, that being your vote by mail, and the one piece going out, that is after you have voted and sent it out, is suddenly going to collapse the post office and risk our election. That is absurd. Think of all the mail that you get in your mailbox and how one in and one out is suddenly going to be something the post office can't handle.
Right. And, it's not even that, though, that they've made the Postal Service to be this, like, traditionally people think of it as you go wait in line and it's just a big bureaucracy and it's slow and it doesn't work real well. But they made it out to be something that I think is that contradicts most Americans' feelings about the post office.
Well, you have to understand the political strategy of the Democrats overall. On the Republican side, we try to appeal to your patriotic interests in the United States of America, and we believe that as America does well, everybody's opportunities improve and everybody overall has a chance to do better. On the Democrat side, their strategy is to divide us into special interest groups. It might be the LGBTQ whatever community. It might be people who are African-American or Hispanic-American. You can see how they're breaking us down on race. They're breaking us down on sex. And here what they're trying to do is get a block vote from the United States Postal Union members and their families. So that's just another block vote that they're trying to give by catering to a special interest group that is in the, well, is not in the interest of the taxpayers of America, because the post office should be self-sufficient, should be more efficient, and should charge whatever prices are necessary for them to be able to be in the black. But the Democrats don't want that done, and this is strictly an effort to cater to that block vote.
Well, but Congressman, the, you know, they're making it out to be even more than that. And it feels maybe it's an insurance policy in case they lose, but you watch these people on MSNBC, like Joe Scarborough or whoever, and the reason Donald Trump is not playing ball and giving more money or doesn't want to give more money to, more assets to the Postal Service, he's trying to rig an election, that it comes down to election rigging, which seems far-fetched to me, but that would be what Nancy Pelosi perhaps has in mind by making people come back from an August recess.
Well, as always, Jeff, you're much more diplomatic than I am. You say it's far-stretched. I contend that it is an outright lie on the part of the Democrats. They know that what they're saying is not the truth, and they're going to try to misrepresent as best as possible in order to deceive enough voters to be able to prevail.
Do you think it works?
With some voters, it does work, particularly with the echo effect from the fake news media. The major networks, the major newspapers, they'll parrot whatever the Democratic Party wants them to parrot. And that makes it much more difficult. But keep in mind, all voters have the right to go to the voting location on election day and vote. And that's the way it's operated for over two centuries in the United States of America. And we've done just fine with that process. And we did that process in 1918 and in 2020 during the great flu epidemic of 1918 to 1920, also known as the Spanish flu. So this is just propaganda, and the Democrats believe that the voters are too dumb to figure it out and that the Democrats can get away with misrepresenting things, and as long as they continue to get away with it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, it seems like there's always going to be this this shiny object or this distraction, this flashbang. Democrats are always going to put something out there, be it Russia collusion, Ukraine, the newest thing, Postal Service. Republicans are always going to have to play defense for this stuff. Is it just a product of having the media in your back pocket?
I would contend that to a certain degree, the socialist Democrats are in the back pocket of the news media. The news media might be the heart and soul of the socialist movement in the United States of America. Best case scenario, if you're trying to give the news media less credit, is to say that they're merely the communications wing of the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party is what's in control, as opposed to the news media being in control.
Congressman, something else we've been talking about a little bit on this show is the economy right now, and I'm going to change gears here. The metrics of the economy, some are really in bad shape. Some others are in good shape. I feel like this $3 trillion just put in the American economy as having some kind of stimulative effect. But given your expertise on debts and deficits and the direction this could go, inevitably, the American people, we're going to feel some kind of economic pain or some kind of distress from everything that's going on right now.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there, Jeff. I don't believe it is a stimulus. Now, it does stimulate some family incomes, but it's quite clear that it is a depressant on gross domestic product of the United States of America, as evidenced by the second quarter having an annualized drop of 32.9%, far and away the most horrific economic quarter in the history of the United States. We should not be paying people not to work, but that is exactly what the CARES Act did, and it's very misguided economics, and it's going to hurt us long term if we keep doing this. It's already hurt us short term. And I go back to the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918 to 1920. During that two-year period of time, over 600,000 Americans died, and the gross domestic product of our country was virtually unchanged. That's the way they handled it. We, on the other hand, have handled it based on fear rather than bravery, and the net effect has been a collapsing economy. Hopefully the third quarter will not continue what happened in the second quarter. We will see.
Well, I do feel like eventually we're going to feel some. There's going to be some kind of pain that we haven't realized. The American public is going to have some kind of economic consequences. And maybe I am in a bubble. I know that there's a lot of people that are out of work, but they're getting that. There's these businesses getting payroll protection, and there's people getting these stimulus checks and unemployment. At some point, this relief situation can't go on forever, right?
No, it cannot. At some point, we will suffer debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy of a country that it took our ancestors centuries to build.
Yeah, I mean, and is that like Venezuela? I mean, do you what do you see in your crystal ball here?
You would see, in my judgment, I look at history when I make these kind of prognostications. The last time we had a Great Depression, which is worldwide, was in the 1930s. And that was the breeding ground for imperialist Japan, Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and World War II. Over 50 million people lost their lives. And keep in mind that the vast majority of that war, there were not weapons of mass destruction.
Well, it makes me wonder, because we're not talking a whole lot about it. There's not a lot of discussion about the direction and what these consequences will be. But in the back of my mind, I feel like they're coming. Even if we elect Joe Biden or Donald Trump, there's going to be some kind of real pain felt by the economy, and it seems like
it's inescapable.
For right now, though, it seems like we're avoiding the worst case scenario.
It's like if you were to suddenly burn a whole lot of borrowing on your credit card, ultimately the bill has to be paid, and if you have grossly exceeded your ability to pay, horrible consequences result to you and your family. Typically, bankruptcy is the ultimate outcome, and the United States is no different, but with one huge exception. If I go bankrupt, or you go bankrupt, or if one of your listeners goes bankrupt, that does not jeopardize the national security of the United States of America, nor does it jeopardize peace around the world. But if the United States of America goes bankrupt, and we can no longer afford a national defense that is superior to any other on the planet, what happens in places like the Middle East, or with Russia and Europe, or China and the South China Sea, or some of its neighbors where it's becoming exceedingly aggressive? If the United States is not the police officer on every corner of the planet, because we no longer have the capability of providing that service to the rest of the planet, I anticipate that wars would break out. There are aggressor nations, and we're holding them in check, and we would no longer be there to hold them in check.
But what do we do this? You make that argument, and somebody says in Washington, well, we need to maintain law and order around the world. To do so, we're going to raise taxes, we're going to inflate our way out of this problem, and then there's going to be consequences, which would seem to be a more likely, or maybe not likely, but it certainly seems like a possibility.
Well, when you talk about inflation, that is one way to try to reduce the adverse effect of a debt burden. But let's be clear as to how bad the inflation is that we're talking about. In Venezuela, the inflation rate was in excess of 1,000% per year. You know, we struggle when it gets 5 to 10%. Think of 1,000% or 2,000% or 50,000%. That's what happens when you hyperinflate, when your currency no longer has value.
And
we really don't want to go there.
No. Well, we would lose our status as the world's reserve currency, and it would seem to me that all of that would have very profound implications on our economy.
Absolutely. You're talking about an economic collapse. You're talking about an economic period that would make the Great Depression look like a cakewalk. And that's the challenge that the American people have to accept and understand. We have limitations on how much money we can borrow. And we need to start electing a whole bunch of different people to Washington, D.C. who understand the long-term threat to the United States of America of us trying to borrow our way into prosperity. It just does not work.
But will we ever, we've been having these discussions about, I mean, as long as I've been alive, but we seem to just kind of plod along. Is it going to take a big event that where people actually to realize this and then maybe react by electing people that are smart about these policies?
It could be a big event that triggers it, or it could be a slow erosion of faith in the dollar. Let me give you an idea of what the dollar really is. It's just a medium of exchange, okay? It's an artificial value placed on different things or services that people produce when they try to sell those goods or services to others. Right now, around the globe, people have confidence in the dollar, and so they're willing to take these pieces of paper that we manufacture at the mint in exchange for what they give us. And it might be cars that take a lot of hours and a lot of capital investment in order to generate that car. And what we're doing on our side of the ocean is we're sending paper through a printing mill. Ultimately, you're going to see foreign governments and foreign manufacturers figure out that that's not a fair medium of exchange, where we spend seconds to print sheets of $100 bills in exchange for their investment of a lot of money, a lot of capital, and many, many hours of time to produce the automobile, and we give them a sheet of paper that took practically nothing for us to produce.
Hey, Congressman,
once they figure out that's not a fair exchange, they're going to quit doing it.
Hey, Congressman, unfortunately, we're out of time. We need to talk more about this. I think it's really important. But as always, I want to thank you for making time for us.
My pleasure, Jeff, and I hope you're enjoying the good times down in the Mobile Bay Area. I'm sure you'll enjoy them more when it gets to be winter.
Well, it cools down a little. It'll be a lot easier to get out and about. But, Congressman, thank you.
My pleasure, and we miss you up here in the Tennessee Valley. Our loss is the Mobile Bay Area's gain.
Thank you. Very, very, very kind. That was Congressman Mo Brooks. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Free and clean.